aspirations, including the digging of the canal. And it was the digging of the canal that led Egypt to be to get occupied by the British almost a decade later. So the canal was dug in 1869. It was terminated. In 1882, Egypt was under occupation. It had to struggle for 7 decades until it won its full independence under Nasser. And then it had to wage a war of independence when, after nationalizing the canal in 1956, the British, French, and Israelis launched a war against
Egypt.
And back in then in 1967, another war was determined by the dynamics of this geopolitical importance of Egypt on one hand, and trying to marginalize it by all means, because Egypt is considered as the biggest Arab country, and it's the basis for either controlling the Arab countries if a foreign power controls it, the way the United States did, for example, after the death of Nasser, under Sadat onward. Or it could be also the bastion of national liberation, not only in Egypt, but also in the Arab world, the Muslim world, and Africa. And
that's why this gets me to a very important point, Dr. Joachim. I'm sorry I have to cut you in, but it's a very limited time that we have. This, adding to the importance of the Suez Canal, which you presented right now, which is a security and geopolitical importance, Israel now decides to make its own Suez Canal by, first of all, before speaking about how it wants to do it, the cost effect of a process of actually having an alternative canal is $55 billion US, but apparently the canal would pay for itself in 10 years of operation. How capable do you think such a project would be, and how would that affect Egypt?
Well, first, the issue is addressed by the Israelis not in terms of economic efficiency, but in terms of geopolitical dominance and hegemony. So even if the canal would cost $5 trillion, they would seek to dig it, the alternative canal, because as part of controlling Egypt is to control and jeopardize its water resources. And since the days of Ben-Gurion, for example, there were talks about diverting and controlling the water resources of Egypt, also of Syria and Iraq, with digging with building dams that would control the flow of water in the Tigris and Euphrates in Iraq and Syria, based on a dam that would be built in Turkey. And back then, and of course a dam in Ethiopia. Back then, these talks were taken lightly, too bad, by the successors of Nasser. Nasser took them seriously, by the way. But then, after his death, Sadat took them lightly and considered that his good relations with the Americans would ward off all these threats. However, the Israelis and the Americans were persistent in pursuing these geopolitical goals. They were the ones to support Turkey in building the dam of Ataturk, and they were also the ones to support another dam in Ethiopia.
Well, another this brings us to the project of the U.S. that was the U.S. planning since the 1960s by using 520 nuclear bombs. The this was a classified memorandum by the U.S. It was declassified in 1996. That was just in time, by the way, when Dimona nuclear reactor was installed inside of the Naqab Desert as well. How do you assess such an unfathomable thought of 520 nukes to open a waterway in the desert in occupied Palestine?
Definitely, because I was talking about ways to control Egypt and put it under chain through controlling the water resources, the Nahda Dam, but also through stripping it from its control of the international, the most important international
waterway,
which is the Suez Canal. And this plan was first forged by Ben-Gurion, the founder of the Israeli entity, in 1949, as a mean not only to control the international trade routes and the link between the East Mediterranean and the Indian Ocean, One way was to destroy, for example, the port of Beirut and replace it with the port of Haifa and normalize relations with UAE, but also by controlling this waterway or having a waterway of its own. But there is also another dimension for this, which is to earn or to give the Israeli entity natural borders, because the canal would separate occupied Palestine from Sinai on one hand, and also by a branch that would nurture the Dead Sea, it would also separate occupied Palestine from Jordan, naturally. And this would give the Israelis borders that are much easier
official
to defend.
Official borders, just to remind our audience that until now, is the Israeli entity is mainly the only entity in the world that has no borders yet because of its occupation. Well, I want to thank you very much, Dr. Jamal Wakim, academic and political analyst, for joining us to talk about this very important issue that might be the reason for any upcoming next war in the Middle East. I'll be happy to have you on again and talk more about it. Thank you for being with us. Please stay tuned next week for more from the Middle East Stream.
Our voice comes from the heart of beautiful Iran. This is the Heart of Life Pounding. IRIB English Radio.
Reporters.
The Commission on Race and Ethnic Disparity says the UK system is not rigged against people from ethnic minorities and there is no proof of institutional racism. In a report released Wednesday, it did admit that minorities still face overt racism, but insisted Britain should be regarded as a, quote, model for other white majority countries.
The report definitely touched a nerve, suggesting that disparities based on race in the economy and education are negligible. But people here in Brixton definitely disagree.
They live in their little tower and they've grown up in a certain way, but they don't see the reality of what black people are actually going through. So no, there is racism and we are not hung up. We need to just be heard that something is wrong with our bringing up our lives and how we are actually treated. Because in reality, we are seen as a different colour.
Institutional racism does exist. It exists in the education system everywhere. You can see it in a classroom. A teacher would discriminate against a black student over a white student just because he's black.
The report has been slammed as nonsense that flies in the face of all existing evidence. Flagged up are many issues that black and minority ethnics grapple on a daily basis. For example, the fact that black people are 9 times more likely to be stopped and searched by police than white people, and black mothers are 4 times likely to die in childbirth. So is this a genuine effort to understand racism in Britain or a PR stunt? Many black artists share the view that racism today is alive and well. Junior from the British Collective says his life and career were deeply impacted by racism.
When I was a kid and I was growing up, if I played football and a white guy kicked me, I would have turned around and I might have effed him blind. But it wouldn't have crossed my mind to call him white. Vice versa, the first thing that he would do is turn around and say, you black so-and-so. Not understanding for himself that he's being racist, he just took it as the norm. It hasn't changed since then. It hasn't changed in any shape, form, or fashion. I hear some politicians trying to turn it into black politicians trying to turn it into a, oh, well, we've come a long way. We haven't.
The COVID-19 pandemic and the disproportionate number of deaths among black, Asian and minority ethnic people clearly illustrate that something is seriously wrong. Being much more likely to have to live in a block of flats and do a job involving a high level of exposure to the public are the sort of factors that critics say prove systemic or structural racism is real. Bianca Rahimi, London.
The Secretary General of Lebanon's Hezbollah movement, Said Hassan Nasrallah, urged Saudi Arabia to immediately end its war on Yemen and lift its blockade on its southern neighbor. Said Nasrallah called on Saudi Arabia not to waste time by proposing deceiving initiatives which lead to nowhere, and stressed that stopping the war and the blockade should be simultaneous. Nasrallah also warned of a Saudi plot to blame Yemen's Ansarullah movement for the ongoing conflict in the war-torn country.
You need to stop the war and end the blockade. Then we can sit and negotiate. Here's where the deception lies. What does it mean if you stop the war without ending the blockade? It means that what they could not realize through a military war, they want to achieve through humanitarian and social pressure.
Elsewhere in his remarks, he said the U.S. is not as strong as before and is on a path toward collapse, while the axis of resistance is gaining power.
America is no longer the America that you knew. There is one main issue that Imam Khamenei has stressed in the last year, and I call on everyone in the region to ponder on that thought. That is the decline of the U.S. America is taking the downward path.
Speaking at an event commemorating late Sheikh Ahmad al-Zin, who was a pioneer in clerics who spoke for Palestine, Nasrallah stressed that the so-called deal of the century has died as a result of the Palestinian people's patience. Observers believe Sayyid Nasrallah's view shows that there is an opportunity for the entire region, even for the Saudis, to be able to stop the crisis of the war they launched on Yemen.
The speech of Sayyid Hassan shows that all regional sides enjoy an opportunity to hold on to their principles and at the same time preserve their achievements. This is true even with the issue of Islamic Republic of Iran and its nuclear program. All of these developments can pave the way for achieving political results.
Hezbollah leader also warned regional countries against relying on the United States. Hezbollah's leader then touched upon the political impasse in Lebanon, calling for the immediate formation of a new government. Hezbollah's Secretary General has stressed in his speech that most of the wars in the region, namely in Syria or Yemen, are mainly aimed to target the resistance and the Palestinian cause and to create a Sunni-Shia rift. Maryam Saleh, Beirut.
The prosecution in Sheikh Zazaki's trial finally completed the presentation of witnesses when the trial resumed in a Kaduna High Court, where the Islamic cleric is standing trial for culpable homicide and other charges, which he pleaded not guilty. The prosecution lawyer expressed the hope that he will get a conviction following the presentation of credible witnesses.
We presented about 15 witnesses for the prosecution. 15 top army generals that were key actors, key players in the whole of the saga that led to the filing of the charges against Balaam Sheikh Zaki. One of our prayers is that the court should overrule the no-case submission, overrule the defense, and convict the defendants accordingly and pass the necessary sentence as provided for.
However, Zazaki's defense team dismissed the claim of the prosecution as it affirmed an earlier position that there shouldn't even have been a case against the Islamic cleric.
So far, based on the evidence advanced thus far, all the 15 witnesses so far, in our estimation, has not made any submission or given any evidence that incriminates the defendant in any manner whatsoever. So it's on that basis that we will be entering the no-case submission.
Sheikh Zazaki and his wife Zinat have been in detention for over 5 years despite the ruling of a federal high court ordering for their release. Over 340 of Sheikh Zazaki's supporters were killed, including three of his biological sons, when soldiers of the Nigerian army attacked his home and worship center in December 2015. Sheikh Ibrahim al-Zazaki and his wife Zinat are detained in the Kaduna Correctional Facility, not far from this courthouse where the trial is taking place. Sheikh Ibrahim al-Zazaki has just turned 70. and his supporters are calling for his immediate and unconditional release. Benjamin Abdullahi, Kaduna.
The European-wide Islamophobia epidemic has shown little sign of curbing as more countries join the criticized burqa ban. Swiss Muslims have been the latest to feel the effects of hate after a referendum passed banning all face coverings in public spaces.
Being free is to be able to show our face, respect women's dignity, have our own identity, and therefore I do not understand the discourse of people who want to imprison women behind this veil.
Following the ban, I reached out to Zainab, a German national who travels regularly to Switzerland, and asked how the ban has impacted her.
This ban makes me really sad and angry because it's the second article here in the federal constitution against the Islam. I think we have to understand that it's not against the niqab or against the minaret. It's against the global Islam. It's just an Islamophobia act, and I think they are not finished. They are looking for the next step.
The ban isn't the first anti-Islam move adopted by the Swiss, as I found out after speaking to the Islamic Central Council of Switzerland.
I just can confirm you, I mean, Swiss chocolate is great. Even we Muslims, we love it. And Toblerone is now even halal, so it's a great thing, yeah? In terms of Islamophobia, this is less great, yes, indeed. Actually, we are indeed suffering since 2009, when this first referendum came up against the minarets, which has been indeed banned with 57.3% of the Swiss population voting yes for this ban. We are constantly, during the last 10 years as a community, have been attacked by the media, have been the target of certain stereotypes.
Local campaigners and activists have vowed to fight back against the ban. However, the global Muslim attention fixed elsewhere. The defenders of Islam in Switzerland have yet to receive the support they deserve.
The reasons behind enforcing the ban vary from country to country, with some claiming it's a security threat, while others simply say that it contradicts Western ideals. Now, whatever the excuse, the traumatizing effect that the ban has on devout Muslim women has been made clear by those who suffer from its enforcement. Robert Carter, London.
The Beit al-Futuh Mosque in London, one of the largest in Western Europe, hosting a pop-up vaccine clinic to boost inoculation rates and overcome vaccine hesitancy amid the many myths that have been created around the pandemic.
NHS approached us and they said with the idea of a pop-up clinic here, vaccination clinic, and you know we welcomed it. Our community has had an abnormally high number of people that have suffered from the virus.
We dispel the myths about microchips and blood clots and answer their queries. Some are really concerned about their fertility.
British scientists say there is a historical trend of lower vaccine uptake in areas with a higher proportion of ethnic minority groups in England.
A recent study found that a high percentage of people from Pakistani or Bangladeshi origins said they were unlikely to be vaccinated. Among black Britons, the figure stands at more than 40%, the highest of all ethnic groups in this country, meaning that some of the most vulnerable people are the least likely to get the jab.
And that's a concern for the British government, which plans to inoculate every adult in the country with the first dose of the vaccine by the end of summer. Online, videos distorting people's understanding of the virus and the vaccines abound. This one, that claims silver solution kills the virus, was proved false by a news channel. Conspiracy theories have deepened public distrust in medical science.
Well, I think there's been some indication among South Asians for the Indian community that there might be some element of beef in the vaccine, that it might be unsafe. Particularly, there's been these questions of whether there's any pork content, porcine content, pig content to the vaccine. Which there is not, but those rumours have been going amongst the Pakistani community in particular, which is large in our country, and they are false accusations.
Among some black Britons, a sense of unease. They don't trust the government,
Some fear there might be different vaccines for black and white people. This week, a video featuring high-profile black figures urging black Britons to take the vaccine.
But we're asking you to trust the facts about the vaccine from our own professors, scientists, and doctors.
Vaccine hesitancy also extends to ultra-Orthodox Jewish communities, mostly over fears it might contain pork. Or from the perspective of this controversial rabbi, popular on YouTube, it might alter people's sexual orientation. Conspiracy theorists exploit a lack of trust in the government and a health system that to some ethnic minorities appears to favor white people and the more affluent. The British government's challenge now is to build trust in the vaccines proven to save lives. Saeed Fariza, London.
Following a late cabinet meeting, Turkish President Recep Tayyip Erdogan announced his government's decision to reinstate a total lockdown on weekends in most Turkish states. The decision came after the number of daily infections with coronavirus reached more than 30,000. Erdogan also stated that during the holy month of Ramadan, the weekend lockdown and daily curfew from 9 p.m. to 5 a.m. will continue, with restaurants only serving delivery and takeouts.
During the month of Ramadan, restaurants and cafes in Turkey will only be allowed to deliver food as part of the measures against the COVID-19 pandemic, as weekend curfews will again be in place on Saturdays.
A week ago, Turkish president had refused to tighten restrictions. He said, although the number of daily infections is high, the number of those hospitalized is less. Some criticize what they call the government's double standards in dealing with the situation, as it is preventing wedding parties and home visits, while the ruling party is organizing conferences to promote for 2023 elections.
Of course, infection rates will continue to rise due to the majority not abiding by the instructions. For example, when the government eased restrictions on restaurants and cafes and were all allowed to operate without preventive frameworks, people and restaurants themselves did not abide by the measures. However, you cannot ask people to be careful and follow restriction guidance when you hold popular gatherings to promote your party for the elections. This contradicts your own statements and measures. On the one hand, they stress the need to adhere to social distancing and the use of protective masks, and on the other, they organize public conferences with public attendance.
Turkish president said that 80% of Turkish citizens live in high-risk provinces, including the capital Ankara and the biggest city in the country, Istanbul. The government now hopes that by the end of the holy month of Ramadan, the majority of Turkish citizens and residents would be vaccinated so that Turkey can welcome tourists again. Rashan Saglam, Istanbul.
A new report on household debt by the Bank of Italy has highlighted that some 40% of Italian households are struggling to pay the rent amid economic difficulties linked to the effects of the coronavirus pandemic. According to the report, a large number of indebted families, 3 out of 10, and individuals, 4 out of 10, have said they are having trouble keeping up the payment of their rents or mortgage installments.
The work situation has worsened significantly, particularly for those who had a casual part-time job. For many, it's hard even to make ends meet. Bear in mind that pupils were forced to follow their classes online up to last week, and also for this reason, families have been under huge pressure.
Besides the economic impact of COVID restrictions, there are increasing concerns regarding the obvious effects on people's mental health. Many simply cannot see the light at the end of the tunnel.
Not long ago, the National Bureau of Statistics, ISTAT, warned that some 5.6 million people were recorded as living in absolute poverty in Italy in 2020, an increase of about 1 million over the previous year. About 300,000 small and mid-sized firms that are especially vulnerable to the business disruptions inflicted by the pandemic have gone bankrupt.
Italy was in dire financial straits before the COVID-19 pandemic struck. It was the only G7 country not to have seen its economic growth return to pre-2007 levels after the global financial crisis, and its per capita income is the same as 23 years ago.
Siccome qualcuno parlava,
the health minister said all non-essential shops will stay closed for the entire month of April, even if the situation rolls back to normal. We disagreed with this approach. Shop must reopen. Italian must get back to work.
Meanwhile, a solidarity initiative to support poor families hit by the pandemic has been officially launched by the National Farmers Association Coldiretti. At least 20,000 households struggling in the middle of the pandemic will be receiving high-quality food products to ensure good meals during Easter festivities. Max Civili, Rome.
Along with a series of events held by Palestinians in the Gaza Strip to mark the Land Day, Palestinian students and youth community also organized a conference. Students, residents, activists, and resistance leaders attended the conference, which was held in connection with several countries around the world to support the Palestinian cause.
We are marking the 45th anniversary of the Land Day, while about 25 countries around the world are participating in the war. Their support for Palestinian cause. We are stressing on our right of return to our lands and that Jerusalem Al-Quds will remain the capital of Palestine. People who marked Land Day proved they will keep fighting the Israeli occupation to gain their rights.
On the eastern parts of the enclave, near the separation fence, Palestinians also held an event stressing on their right of return to the occupied lands. They also expressed their refusal for the recent normalization of ties with Israel and considered it as a stab in the back of the Palestinian cause.
We stress that Israeli occupiers will leave our land by force, and Palestinian resistance won't remain silent against Israeli violations of Palestinian land and rights. We call on the world to stop the normalization of ties with Israel. That gives Israel a green light to keep up its inhuman aggression and crimes against Palestinians.
We are proving that we won't give up defending our land. What happened on this day is unforgettable, and we stress that we won't allow Israel to take over our Palestinian lands. We mark this day to express that the resistance is our way to defend Palestine and force the Israeli occupation to leave.
Land Day is marked every year by Palestinians since March 30, 1976, to honor those who fell while defending their lands from being illegally seized by the Israeli government. When Israel declared its intention to annex approximately 5,000 acres of land from its Palestinian owners in several villages. The Land Day comes as Palestinians are calling the international community to stop the Israeli expansionism and land grab, vowing they will keep fighting until liberating Palestine and its capital, Jerusalem Al-Quds. Ruba Shabet, Gaza.
France is responsible but not complicit in the Rwandan genocide. That's the main conclusion of a report on the Rwandan genocide that the official Duclair Commission submitted to French President Emmanuel Macron. In 1994, extremist militia from Rwanda's Hutu ethnic group slaughtered more than 800,000 people from their own ethnic group as well as the Tutsis minority in a matter of 3 months. France intervened before, during and after the genocide, but not to prevent it. François Granet, who is the author of The French State and the Genocide of the Tutsi in Rwanda, says the French government's report into the issue does not go far enough.
From 1990 to 1995, French decision-makers decided to maintain Rwanda in their zone of influence. They decided to arm the regime and to support the Hutu's extremists against Tutsi before, during, and even after the genocide. The French authorities had been perfectly informed on the issue. Even if France did not have any intention to commit genocide, the French support had an undeniable facilitating effect on the Hutu's extremists.
Experts have proved that French authorities received many alerts during the ongoing genocide. In this video shot in Rwanda during the genocide, a French sergeant warns the French Army's Chief of Special Operations that Tutsis are being massacred not far from where they are. But the French colonel does not react.
Complicity
means help, and France allows the creation of an extremist government and its recognition by the international community. The perpetrators of genocide are welcome in France, and they find shelter in France and in Belgium once the genocide is completed. France delivers weapons before, during, and after the genocide. All this means political complicity.
Rwanda is a small country, mostly agricultural, with very few natural resources. No big deal. So why this was of interest to France?
France gives the support to dictators. If one goes down, the others will not trust France anymore. In the beginning of France-Afrique in the 60s, France abandoned one dictator and the consequences were catastrophic. Mitterrand and other French presidents swore not to abandon any other African dictator.
The report on Perox's role in the Rwandan genocide has other downsides besides trying to obscure France's real role. The probe was carried out with Parliament, where Macron's allies have a majority, refusing to give investigators full access to relevant archives. This new report highlights the responsibility of France in the genocide in Rwanda. However, this National Assembly refused to open all the archives, and French authorities still do not want to admit their complicity in the genocide. Chris Den Hunt, Paris.
What you heard was an IRIB English radio program. Please log on to our website www.parstoday.com/en.
بسم الله الرحمن الرحيم السلام عليكم ورحمة الله
Selection of Ayatollah Khamenei's viewpoints
همه با وجود قده سرطانی اسرائیل مخالفیم
All of us are opposed to the cancerous tumor Israel
وجه مشترک همه وحدت امت اسلامی
Unity of Islamic Ummah is the aspect that all of Islamic denominations have in common.
This is a part of a speech delivered on March 21st, 2021 by Ayatollah Khamenei, the leader of the Islamic Revolution, on the occasion of Nowruz. Support for production.
Another issue is about support for production, such as providing legal incentives and importing the materials on which the production is dependent. For example, some of our products need raw materials, which should be imported from abroad, and we also need some machinery whose importation should be facilitated. A major way to help production is to do something to increase the people's purchasing power, because without demand, a boost in production will fail to achieve its purpose. The people's purchasing power is the same as the value of national currency. This is a very important point that should be discussed by experts in due circumstances. Another way to help production is to do something to eliminate dealers and third parties because they increase prices and producers and consumers will be hurt. Both will be hurt. If dealers and third parties, those whose existence is unnecessary, are eliminated, this will help production a great deal. There are other such measures as well. If these things are pursued seriously in the year 1400 according to the solar calendar, it will surely bring about a transformation in the area of the economy.
Your light and love, all I see, nothing more I'd ever want to need. My Lord, protect me from dishonor, grant me faith to be stronger.
fighting against corruption.
There are other conditions as well which should be observed. One of these conditions is combating corruption. Combating corruption is a very important issue. Corruption channels and outlets should be blocked. This means reforming the banking system and the custom system. The path of the corruption should be completely blocked.
Having competent managers and benefiting from capacities are necessary conditions for economic blossoming.
I want to say to the Iranian nation that because of some problems in the economic situation and in the people's livelihood conditions, some individuals have used the opportunity to fabricate negative stories, saying things such as nothing can be done in any way. Some people are like this. Some individuals in cyberspace, in our press and primarily, and unfortunately in foreign propaganda networks, use the problems that the people face as a means to portray a completely dark picture of the things conveying the feeling that nothing can be done. However, I will tell you that this is not all the case.
Alhamdulillah, alhamdulillah, all praises to
We are with you. What about you? Fruitful Moments with IRIB English Radio.
Facebook shut down Press TV's page without prior warning. That was on Friday, March the 26th. It wasn't the first time, but this time it's permanent. Facebook gave no explanation for its action and no right of appeal to Iran.
The American social media platform did say it had banned Press TV for failure to follow Facebook community standards. But it didn't specify how Iran's professional English news network had violated its rules. Also, the so-called community standards are pretty shady and hard to follow. For a review of both media platforms and how it came to this, stay with me, Leila Faramanzi, on Iran Today.
Social media sees no borders and requires no visa. It is a platform for citizens of the world to converse freely and exchange knowledge. But is it? It is, selectively. But those not selected may find themselves bound by the very social cyber platform of no boundaries. In our case, we were bound and thrown out of the ring. No fair competition here. No free flow of alternative information. Sounds hardly democratic. I asked for a comment on how an American institution might act this out of character so easily.
Mr. Albertini is a media expert of position. He made a trip to Press TV studios to pitch in.
Such desperate reaction by a country that's the flag bearer of human rights, or so it likes to say. Then how can you even analyze such an action?
Previously, they all claimed that they defend alternative voices in cyberspace, but the United States has shown for at least over the past year that it does not adhere to the basic principles of liberal democracy. The former U.S. President Donald Trump is banned from Facebook, Twitter, and several other social media because the deep state made the decision you can't expect they would allow other voices to be heard.
Here it is. The community standards we supposedly violated. Facebook says of its standards, we do not allow hate speech on Facebook because it creates an environment of intimidation and exclusion, and in some cases may promote real-world violence. Right, it does. Which is why homegrown terrorists and crazies should be removed from the platform. Except, Facebook doesn't seem to have a problem with them.
در مورد آزادی بیان هم همینطوره. در شبکه‌های مجازی.
The same is true about freedom of expression. In the social networks, you see that they allow Iranians to learn how to make bombs, but they do not make the slightest move that is against the idea of liberal democracy. They simply block the account. They don't allow the photo of General Qasem Soleimani to be published. But there are dozens of pages belonging to Al-Qaeda and ISIS. How can you explain such a contradiction?
Where were the standards when white supremacists and thugs used Facebook to recruit crazies? Recruits that reportedly came to Kenosha with assault rifles after the shooting of unarmed Jacob Blake. There's no sign Facebook has any interest in removing domestic terrorists from its platform henceforth either. American social media platforms waste no time in silencing the voice of Iranian media under the pretext of policy violations, but they serve as the playing field of anti-Muslim hate groups and Iranophobes in the name of freedom of expression. Guess hate speech is free if it leads to spilling the right blood. The double standard is jaw-dropping. Mr. Mormeniha comments. He's a media expert who gives us his time every so often.
Why now? Why has Facebook thrown Iran out of the ring now?
شبکه‌های بین‌المللی دنیا خب به قاعدتاً از مخاطبینی که دارن بالاخره کسایی که
International satellite networks have audiences that need to pay fees to be able to use the contents of the channels. But you can see several Farsi-speaking channels out there that are working on huge budgets but won't demand payments from their audience. They produce a variety of programs for Iran and are looking for implementing U.S. policies on Iran and actively work to nullify what media outlets such as Press TV are doing.
The complete shutdown of the Facebook account of the Press TV network once again showed that the United States, despite its human rights gesture, does not give critics of America or Zionist occupation any rights in the media. But why do I say the United States? Well, stepping on the First Amendment's freedom of expression is a big feat for a social media company to undertake single-handedly. And looking at background, in November 2019, the U.S. State Department called on Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter to suspend the accounts of Iranian government leaders. That is but one instance of such crackdowns, which have not stopped at officials' social media accounts. Mr. Khoddadi is press deputy for Iran's Ministry of Culture and Islamic Guidance. He has given us his take on these matters via Skype.
The United States is perhaps one of the few countries in the world where the government completely dominates the media, despite the facade created by the private sector. If it wasn't the case, they couldn't have imposed sanctions against Iran, nor could they prevent other nations from cooperating with Tehran. The Americans completely dominate the rules and regulations made in these companies. Their security and political bodies have complete control over them. This is part of their very nature.
When something happens in Iran, like protests for different issues, the American media stir it up. But when that takes place in their country, when there are protests and dissent in the U.S., they impose restrictions in that region and won't allow people's voices to reach the world. We've seen instances where they even cut off the internet completely and don't allow the exchange of information to take place. If this happens in a country like Iran, they cover it with fanfare and impose sanctions against our government officials.
Why shut the Press TV platform permanently, and why now? I've been looking for all sorts of things we might have done wrong, and I can't find any. And Facebook refused to comment. It just said it was shutting down the pages of the station and some of its employees, and that it wouldn't say why, on security grounds. So perhaps Press TV has got it right.
We are not surprised that the hegemonic system removes any voice that isn't its own, and it has no other choice. If it accepts that this voice is heard, it would be creating a contradiction, because it has always painted a false picture of the events, and the public opinion would badger them for why they weren't showing the true pictures of things. Or if it silences the voice, it has gone back on the principle of liberal democracy. It has chosen to silence the voices, however, as it feels this option better benefits its interests.
It's self-evident. Facebook is no fair democratic media platform for opposing voices, following any clear, balanced community standards expecting social skills. So what might be the ulterior motive of what the Milwaukee Independent described as this creepy space that people can hide from their true identities to spread lies, rumors, nonsensical conspiracy theories and hatred unabated?
The United States and the hegemonic Western system do not adhere to any of the principles of a liberal democratic system. I will give you an example. The issue of elections is one of the main foundations of a liberal democratic system. But in 2006, people in Gaza went to the polls and elected Hamas. But they've been under siege by land, air, and sea for 15 years now because of the results of that election.
Truly, rather than serve as a social media company, Facebook has acted as a data mining company. How it helped decide the 2016 presidential election outcome was it let information on its users to the highest bidder, Cambridge Analytica in this case. That was the political data firm hired by Donald Trump's election campaign, which was given access to information on 50 million Facebook users, on their likes and dislikes and friend networks. Knowing of their likes and dislikes meant knowing how to target them with digital ads to affect their vote.
Communicating information and content production take precedence. Nowadays, there are so many different layers of communication due to the advancements in the field of information technology that where the information is being published doesn't determine its value. It's the content that does. If the information includes ideas that are comprehensible and needed, the message will be transferred in some way. We are not living in a world where we talk about the word monopoly while referring to the dissemination of information.
The democratic world as we knew it has been cracking down on Press TV and Iranian broadcast pretty obviously since 2012. I'll mention some instances while reviewing what Press TV is and stands for. How the democratic world has so blatantly infringed this country's freedom of speech and voicing the voiceless is a matter to ponder on.
When there are no reports about Israeli atrocities and what transpires in countries like Yemen, there won't be any sensitivities. But if the information is reported accurately, people will question their governments. The U.S., which is usually behind such crimes, will have to be accountable. We are aware of the crimes the Israeli regime has been perpetrating over the years. The reports are being broadcast by the Islamic Republic's media. Naturally, the U.S., which is Israel's biggest supporter, won't accept this and works to prevent the information from reaching other people.
Facebook has been cracking down on Press TV and the likes, while alternative media's natural purpose is to counter misinformation by mainstream international media.
But then, it is alternative. It is in the minority, and it's swimming against the current to sound voices stifled by world power state media.
Media outlets around the globe have quite a bit on Western media censorship. So let's have a quick look before returning to our own narrative. So what are our select outlets for the day? Sputnik News, Evening Standard, and Newsweek. Russia, like Iran, is in the line of fire with US censorship. And its Sputnik News has put in quite a bit on Press TV's censorship by Facebook. Censorship and shutting down, actually. Facebook permanently bans Iran's Press TV over alleged policy violations. This is the second time Press TV has come under attack on Facebook this year. Last October, the Department of Justice seized 92 Iranian government domains, claiming they were being unlawfully used by Iran's Revolution Guard Corps to engage in a global disinformation campaign. Before that, Twitter removed over 100 Iran-linked accounts supposedly trying to disrupt the conversation during the first Biden-Trump debate. In the summer of 2020, Facebook and Twitter labeled multiple Iranian, Chinese, and Russian news outlets as state media and blocked them from buying ads targeting U.S. users. The state media labels did not apply to the BBC, Deutsche Welle, or other government-funded Western news agencies, nor to those accounts funded by the U.S. government, such as Radio Free Europe. In 2019, Twitter deleted thousands of accounts it alleged were associated with the Iranian government, before later admitting it never saw the CIA startup report which led to the ban. The same year, Facebook also deleted accounts belonging to prominent Iran's Revolution Guard Corps figures under the pretext of U.S. sanctions. On Facebook's double standards, the Evening Standard says, Facebook guidelines allow abuse targeted at public figures. Facebook's bullying and harassment policy allows public figures to be targeted online in ways that are otherwise banned on the site, The Guardian has reported. Internal moderator guidelines reportedly leaked to the newspaper says public figures are considered to be permissible targets of certain types of abuse, including calls for their death. According to The Guardian, the guidelines say public figures can be targeted in ways that the company bans for those classed as private individuals, although they cannot be tagged in the content, and its policy protects them from direct threats of severe physical harm. In response to The Guardian, a Facebook spokesperson said, "We think it's important to allow critical discussion of politicians and other people in the public eye. If you can't be sure a friend will stand by you when you next have a campaign, unfriend that friend," says Newsweek. It's time for campaigns to unfriend Facebook. Everybody's social network includes that one friend, the one who shows up sometimes and completely disappears on you the next time. Eventually, you start making plans without them. For political campaigns, that unreliable friend is Facebook. Ironically, the company that redefined the term social network has shown a shocking lack of social skills when it comes to campaigns. Over the past months, Facebook has set increasingly arbitrary and bizarre bans on campaign advertising, making it virtually impossible for campaigns to use the platform. While harshly cracking down on legitimate campaign advertising, Facebook spent years doing next to nothing to stop damaging organic content like QAnon that spread like wildfire. Facebook's last 6 months of unpredictability is untenable for political campaigns whose staffers are tasked with planning how to most effectively spend budgets that can reach millions of dollars. The reality is, if Facebook is going to randomly restrict how campaigns are able to use its platform, planning becomes next to impossible. Campaigns are understandably beginning to tire of having their plans wrecked by Facebook's impulsive, seemingly PR-driven policy changes. That would be it for the news section. Back to our narration.
Press TV has repeatedly fallen victim to censorship on multiple fronts. On Facebook and Instagram and Twitter, as well as on Google service platforms such as YouTube.
If you block Press TV, it doesn't mean you're turning it off. The world isn't doomed to know what the Americans want and not know what they don't. Those times are over. But they might be still dwelling in the past and pursue the same old methods. When Press TV is being targeted, it means it's being influential. No one would block something that isn't effective. The network has negated their interests. It promoted our people's interests. This could be the main reason why they target Press TV.
Press TV CEO Jebelli called for a parallel pressure campaign with Russia to counter Western dominion over world media. Irked by double standards and discriminatory policies exercised by Western media regulators, he said this was most evident in their behavior toward the IRIB's Press TV and the anti-Iran London-based Iran International channel. In September 2018, Iran International invited the spokesperson for a terrorist group to a live show in which he took responsibility for a terrorist attack that killed at least 25 people, including women and children in Iran, and injured 60 others. British media watchdog Ofcom failed to take any action against Iran International, whereas in 2012, Ofcom revoked Press TV's license and has threatened to do the same with RT, Russia Today. One's mind drifts towards the notion of legal complaint to some international media authority, the International Court of Justice perhaps, but it appears that would be as if complaining to the fox of its own tail. RT's managing director Nikolov said his correspondents were being targeted in a Western pressure campaign. Apart from their pages on social media being taken down, dozens of lawsuits were being filed against them at Western courts.
Today's world is not a time for massacres of voices. Today's world is not a time to hide the truth. The third decade of the 21st century is slowly forming a balance of power in the field of public diplomacy. It seems that this is the last desperate attempt that the ruling system is making to counter independent voices, that these voices will reach the international public in a variety of ways.
There are ways, if not with immediate effect. Press TV and RT have already taken steps to expand media cooperation. It was in 2018 that Nikolov and Jebelli signed a memorandum of understanding for cooperation in Tehran. That would be to take joint media and legal action against censorship crackdowns by the West. It is intriguing what more Iran might have done to free itself of dependence on American social media platforms and European satellites.
As you might remember, following the martyrdom of General Soleimani, who was a leader of the fight against terrorism, they placed restrictions on people who posted his photos or videos on several platforms, including Instagram. In many cases, there wasn't any violation of their policies and regulations. They did it unilaterally. I think we need countries whose policies are not in line with those of the U.S. to join efforts and build a powerful social media network. We know that those who support the Islamic Republic, those who back freedom of expression and are opposed to America's policies, and even people from the U.S. will join the network.
Press TV has been active, publishing its content round the clock, namely on YouTube, Twitter, Facebook and Instagram. But it also distributes its content on its own IPTV called YourMedium.com, given repeated censorship attacks by the U.S. tech giant Google's YouTube service. Many expected that with a Democratic administration taking the reins in America, Barack Obama's former vice president for that matter, media strictures would ease. But mainstream U.S. correspondents are complaining that with things getting worse at the Mexican border concerning immigrants, media access has in fact been compromised. Border police have in fact been muzzled not to address the media at all. And we saw how it took President Biden 2 months to hold his first press conference. That's the longest it's taken a president in 100 years. But for how long can information be locked up in this day and age? And should the truth out,
How can the US and West hold on to their power? Mr. Abedini explains.
Let's suppose they remove the voice of Iran from the satellite and social networks. But what can they do about the voices of people in China, Russia, Venezuela, Bolivia, Lebanon, Syria, and other nations? If they manage to silence all these voices, how can they silence the voice of those in the U.S. who say they can't breathe unless they kneel on the necks of each and every one of them, suffocating them? Otherwise, unless they can make these impossible steps, the voices will continue to be heard.
What's the power behind media regulators' decisions? Why this sensitivity towards Iran and its alternative voice? The entirety of social media is either owned or dominated by Zionists, as is the mainstream corporate media, as stressed by Dr. Kevin Barrett, American author and